Thank you, Ray. My name is Joe Phelan, and I am an alcoholic. And through the grace of God, working through this program, through you and people like you, one day at a time, I'm going to take a drink, nor have I, or a substitute for a drink, since the 1st of March in 1949. And for that, I am deeply grateful. I don't know how long it has been since I have had the opportunity to share in this particular meeting. It's been a long, long time. And I hope it wasn't because I was so bad that they made me wait 20 years to get back on this podium again. But in any case, I'm glad to be here because this is the place, right now, where you, most of you, are involved in the Third Service legacy, as am I. And the third, working in the Third Service legacy has been and is important to me and has helped my life and my recovery tremendously. And so I'm particularly grateful to be here. I'm also grateful to be here because this is an AA meeting. And you and I are in this together. This is where, in a place like this, with people like you, that I got sober. And I had a chance, because of you, to have a life. And without you and without this fellowship, there would have been no chance. Maybe some people can get sober by themselves or by some other ways. I could not. I am not guessing about this. I know it to be true because I tried all the ways I knew. I went to the priests of my church and tried to get help in the last 2 years of my drinking. And they could not help me. I went to the doctors, and I took a cure, and I did other things that the doctors recommended, and I could not get sober. I went to the psychiatrists, one of them Harry Tebow, who early on was the first psychiatrist of a major rank to support what we are trying to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me that he could not help me. I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1947. I came here and I could not get help, not because of you, but because I applied halfway measures. And I am told, and I found out myself, that for an alcoholic like me, sick in the mind, the body, and the soul, halfway measures would avail me nothing. Alcoholics Anonymous is the very core and the very center and has been for the last 30 years, one day at a time. For I am one of those who needed this miracle, who needed this experience that we have, who needed something that I can't put down in a book or write in a paper, who needed this thing that we cannot define, that's an experience, that somehow it's inexact and it's different, but it works. So I know my fellow members of Make an Assembly where I came from. And I am very, very grateful to be here, to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Carl Jung was the father of modern psychiatry. He was the man that is credited as being the leader the psychiatrists who are following him. And he had a client, patient by the name of Roland. And Roland was a wealthy American businessman. And Roland came to the great doctor, and the great doctor did what he could do, and Roland went out and got drunk. And he came back to the great doctor, and the doctor said, "Roland, I cannot help you. Somehow you must find a transforming spiritual experience." And many of you know the story. Roland went out and he met Ebby, and Ebby got with Bill, and we were on our way 5 years later. I want to remember that here tonight in Macon. I want to remember that in order for me to stay sober and to live the kind of a life that full sobriety can give me, I need to be in the mainstream of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I need to be doing the things that my sponsors told me to do one day at a time. I am not cured. I am not recovered. And of course, anything I say is my own opinion based on my own experience. I consider that I am a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's a story that I heard recently, a year or two ago, that maybe says what I mean. The people in my home group know this, but I'm going to tell you about it and share it with you. There was this young fellow, and he had just come into AA, and he started to work the program. And he started to work very vigorously, very hard, and he got into the steps, and he started to live one day at a time. And he finally went to his sponsor, and he says, "You know, in the book it says around the promises, before we're halfway through, it says we're going to be able to know a new freedom and so on." And he says, "Mr. Sponsor, when am I going to be halfway through?" And the sponsor looked at him, and he wanted to give him an honest, straightforward answer. And he couldn't. And so he went to his sponsor. And his sponsor says, "You go back and tell that kid a couple of things. Number one, don't worry about it. Number two, ain't never going to get there." And that's the way I feel about my recovery. I feel that one day at a time after 30 years, it's so beautiful and there's such a long way to go that maybe I'm not halfway through yet. And that's okay, because I'm not going anywhere. At 10 years of age, I had a secret. And that secret was that my mother was about to be taken away to a mental institution, and I was in on the transaction. And I couldn't handle it. It was not something in 1931, when I was 10 years old, that you could share with your fellow. And so I did. I stuck it in my gut. And 5 years later, I got an answer. And that answer was simple. It was around a campsite in my native New England. Some booze was passed around, some wine. I got into it, I got drunk, I blacked out, I passed out. I went looking for and found a drink in the morning, and I never drank any differently for the next 12 years. I found out something. Sometimes I think that fella who tells the story about the airplane pilot told my life. My first 12 years as in my active alcoholic days. He said that he radioed into his base, this pilot, and he said he was low on gas and he was losing altitude and he was lost. But he says, "I'm happy to report that I'm maintaining my speed." And that's what I was doing, you know, completely blind to everything and just going straight down the tube. I so relate to young people, not because I am trying to go back 40 years, but because I was spacey. I was in trouble. I went to the hospitals and I went to the jails And I messed up all around town and anywhere else. But I also got in deep trouble inside. And from a kid with the normal attributes and the normal opportunities at 15, looking forward to a reasonable life, I didn't have one to face. Because I was an alcoholic and my life was unmanageable. 21 years of age, I'm into booze 6 years. I'm down in my beloved Southland for the first time. I'm on a beautiful island off the coast of South Carolina. It's called Paris Island. It was during the Second World War, just to date things, and I was in the Marine Corps, and for 9 or 10 weeks I stayed sober. And those of you who know something about it know how much credit I got coming to me for staying sober at Paris Island in boot camp. Eventually, I got up to Quantico, and I got a chance for a commission, and I wanted that commission. I was imbued with the spirit of those days and of the Marine Corps, and I wanted it. And I was willing to pay the price. Well, about 2 or 3 weeks to go for my commission, I got a 72-hour pass. And I went to Washington, D.C., and 73 hours later, I woke up on a park bench out of a blackout in Washington, and that was the end of my commission. And the thing that was important about that, to me, looking back, as I began to get sober in this fellowship, was that I was 21 years old, and I was powerless over alcohol, and I didn't know it. I wanted that commission. I took a drink, and the booze was in command. I tried the ways that we talk about, the kind of ways to get sober that I see everybody else trying in Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried to find a way. First to drink, and failing that, I tried to find a way to get sober. There was a lot of things happening to me on the outside. A lot of things. They weren't good, but they were nowhere near as bad as the things that were happening to me on the inside. From a halfway normal, ambitious kid, I ended up full of fear and full of hate and full of all the things that were negative. I ended up in serious trouble with you and with me, solely because I was an alcoholic and my life was unmanageable. And so, just to share with you a little bit, thinking here tonight in Macon, how magnificent it is to have this program. You know, Dr. Bob was asked a year or so before he died, and I like to remember this, because like you, I'm interested in Alcoholics Anonymous, not only for me, but for those yet to come, because I'm grateful. And I know this program somehow works for sick drunks who want it to work. And somebody asked Dr. Bob in 1948, well, you've got 70 or 80,000 members is what we had in those days, the year before I was to get sober. What is the future of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bob? How do you see AA's future? Are they going to be able to help more people? And Bob said some things that some of you know about. Some things that I like to remember as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous one day at a time. He said, I think that if the members of AA are willing to try and get sober and stay sober, if they are willing to believe in some power greater than themselves as they see that power, and if they are willing to help somebody else who wants their help, for free and for fun, he says, I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous will have any difficulty. Yesterday, I had the opportunity, through some good fortune, to be involved with a sick drunk. And this was a drunk who was still drinking, and he was out on the street. And I got a call, and we did some things in Atlanta, and then we did some things in Augusta. And to make a long story short, that guy is in a hospital in Augusta as of last night, and he's maybe on his way. But the thing that is important, the thing that makes me think tonight and makes me realize, he and I had an opportunity, this sick drunk, to share a couple of hours. And he was telling me how his wife was such a bad person and how somebody else had taken some money from him, and all the things that you and I know. And when we got through, he allowed that maybe he was at some fault too, and that maybe he had something to live for, and that maybe he could go to Augusta in this hospital and get sober and start again. And I don't know about you, but I don't get enough of those kinds of experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous today. And I'm grateful for that. In 1949, in February, I started drinking. And to this point, it's been the last drunk that I had. And I did my usual thing around the southeastern Massachusetts, and I wound up in a hospital called the Washingtonian Hospital around the 20th or the 22nd of February in 1949. I was very fortunate to get in that hospital because I was barred from it, and I won't go into the details. But generally, hospital directors don't like patients who, when they come in, get other people drunk. And I had done some of that in previous visits. We got no program in this hospital. We just got a little paraldehyde, a little more paraldehyde, and finally we got something to eat and we got out of there. But as I got upstairs a couple of 3 days later, I learned something. Number one, I learned that my roommate in that hospital, in that detox unit, the first night, didn't make it. He died. So I learned something again that I don't want to forget, that alcoholism kills. And for me, this is serious business. And when I'm working with a drunk, I need to remember that. When I got upstairs, I got a hold of my wife about 2 or 3 days later, and I prevailed upon her to come in and take me out of that hospital after a few days, where our marriage, euphemistically, was, to put it, in trouble. She did this. And she had no more hope that I could get sober than I did. There was one difference. I really wanted to get sober. During the time, 2 years before, when I had tried all these things, AA, the doctors, the hospitals, the psychiatrists, the priests, somewhere along the line, I had changed. And I was ready for a message. I did not know this, but I wanted to get sober. And I think that's something that I always have to remember when I'm working with an alcoholic. It looks like I had to be ready for the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And 2 years before, I was not ready. 2 years before, I did not hear you people when you talked with me. But I was ready in 1949, I was ready for help, and my problem was that I didn't think I could get sober. For I had tried all the things that I described to you and had failed. I found myself a couple of days later in an AA meeting, and some things started to happen in early March of 1949. Number one, I was in AA. Number two, I wanted to get sober. Number three, I was listening and I was hearing somebody. And number four, the very first night, I don't know why this happened, but I was given a sponsor. And I like to think that maybe it was a power greater than myself that gave me this guy, or maybe the group had just figured that for me to have any chance at all, I needed to have a sponsor of the first meeting. But in any case, that's what happened. And this guy was 47 years old. He was a dentist, and he had drank a little differently than I had. He had really not become an alcoholic until he was 40, give or take. He was 47, and he was really 47. He had lived a reasonably useful life. I was 27, going on 10. For the simple reason that I had started drinking when I was 15, and you don't grow any during the next 12 years if you're drinking booze. Sickly in the way I was drinking. Hunt used to drive 20 miles to pick me up and then drive 20 more to our meeting. I guess this man taught me all the basics of life that I had never learned because I was an active alcoholic. Every problem that I had, I laid out with him. I firmly believe tonight, here in Macon, that he saved my life. But if you talk to his wife tonight, she would tell you I had saved his. And isn't that the way it goes in Alcoholics Anonymous? Anything I say, of course, is my own opinion, but I don't believe in the guru theory. I believe when I'm working with you that we're both having something happen, and it's good for both of us. Anyway, that's the way she feels. And I believe in sponsorship. I have a couple of sponsors today, 30 years sober, in this program. I believe in sponsors. I believe in working with others. Because the book Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that nothing will do anything more to ensure my sobriety, which is what I'm interested in, than that. I was sober about 3 months. And I went to my sponsors with a sudden burst of honesty, and I said, I'm afraid I'm going to take a drink. I'm jiggy. They looked at me with the eyes of sponsors who look at somebody who hasn't heard what they've been trying to tell them for 3 months. And they said, Joe, how come? And I said, well, I was sober once 2 years ago, 3 months. And I'm sober 3 months now, and so I'm afraid I'm going to take a drink. And they said, Joe, we want to talk to you about staying sober one day at a time. And you know, that was one of the most significant happenings in my recovery. It was something upon which I could build a life. I could stay sober one day at a time, even in those days. And today I can live one day at a time. One of the things that they got me into right away were the 12 steps of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had already admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. I knew that I could not drink and that my life was a mess. And so I had truly surrendered to booze. I didn't know it then, and I didn't know it for a long time. But I was really had another surrender to take place that is still going on in my life. And that is the surrender to a power greater than myself, the complete surrender. Oh, I turn it loose, and I surrender to God as I understand it, but not perfectly. And so I have a long way to go in this area. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had some knowledge of insanity. I don't mean just the alcoholic kind of my own. But my mother, I shared with you, and I had two younger brothers also with mental illness. And as I went down the road to alcoholism, and I started to be called some of the names that some of us get called as we bounce around out in the street, I began to fear near the end that I was too sick for Alcoholics Anonymous, that I had something else. And so when they said, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I sort of welcomed that. I had a problem in the beginning about a power greater than myself. 27, going on 10, I had no concept of a power greater than myself. I had been drunk for 12 years, and I had gotten myself sickened unto the death on the inside. And the only God that I knew about was the one that I had learned years and years ago about at home, a God of power. A God that if I had a bad thought, I was in trouble. The God that I learned about as a young boy, a strict, a powerful, an avenging God. And so when these guys said to me, some power greater than yourself, and they started using the word God, I was in trouble at the very beginning. But I wanted to get sober. I was willing to go to any lengths at that point. I wanted sobriety because I equated sobriety with life. And so they said to me, we can do it some different ways. And the God that I started with was a God who was a power for good. I also started with the power of the group. And over a period of time, as I started to get sober, this God became God the Father to me. A God of love, a God of understanding, a God of tolerance. Still a long way off for a long time, but a God of warmth and a God of understanding. And so I started way back then. When we were sober about 4 years, I was 31 years old, we had four little children, we came to Georgia. And we moved to Atlanta in 1953. And as I say, I was sober 4 years. There were about four or five groups in Atlanta at that time. And it's nice to see Fred in this hall because he was there when we came south. And I bring to all of you Neely's love. She was going to come down here, but she just can't make it right now. She was there. And I'm always being grateful for the warmth and the love that the people, the three or four, five groups in Atlanta showed us when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it really is a thrill to realize today we have maybe 150 groups, or maybe 200 or 250 meetings. I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood it, to the best of my ability. And I continue to do this. You know, when I got sober, my sponsors advised me to do the first 9 steps once and then live on the last 3. And I did that for many, many years in Alcoholics Anonymous. But in the last 7 or 8 years, I have done it differently, and it's been better. And I want to share it with you. I redo the steps on a regular basis. Better than that, I leave myself open to let the steps work with me. What good was a 4th and a 5th step that I did 30 years ago today, when I only knew 3% of what was happening to me and what was wrong with me? It's much better this other way. And having taken a searching and a fearless moral inventory, I've taken many of them over the last 30 years. I need to. That's the way this program for me works. And I've learned something in the last few years that I want to share with you. The nature of my difficulties on the inside have changed. It's not the guy who pushes me off the expressway that's my enemy. It's not the boss who doesn't appreciate what I'm trying to do and doesn't give me a raise. It isn't the fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't appreciate what I'm trying to do. No. My enemies are fear, resentment, misunderstanding, selfishness. My enemies are ego and ego and ego. And so, like Al McGinnis wrote many years ago, when I sit alone in a room, all my enemies are there. And I'm grateful to know that, because it gives me a chance to change the quality of my sobriety one day at a time. You know, in the 7th step, where we humbly ask God to remove our defects of character, in the 8th, where we make a list of all the people we had harmed, came willing to make amends to them all, in the 9th, where I made direct amends to those people, I experienced, when I first took those steps and later on also, I experienced something that I want to share with you. I experienced healing. I started to get better. And we don't talk very much about the principle of forgiveness in Alcoholics Anonymous, although it's throughout our fellowship and throughout our program. But I want to share with you for a moment or two how important that principle is, has been, and continues to be. I needed my wife's forgiveness, my father's forgiveness, my friend's forgiveness when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And in following that step, the 7th, 8th, and 9th, I went to them, and I saw them, and I sought that forgiveness, plus making the amends. And practically in every case, nothing is perfect, but practically in every case, they gave me forgiveness. And by doing that, they healed me and gave me a chance to keep walking, one day at a time, sober. And in the last few years, I've had the opportunity, as the wheel of life turns, to forgive myself, to forgive others, to have the opportunity to do to others what has been done for me. And I like to think of this principle of forgiveness. I like to think of this feeling of healing the last 2 years, four men who were significant in my sobriety were taken in the night. A father, two younger brothers, a brother-in-law. And I feel I don't mourn them. I miss them. But they and I had dealt together. We had experienced forgiveness and love. And when they went into the next room or wherever they've gone, everything was well. And I'm grateful for that. And maybe if there is someone here tonight, maybe this experience, this sharing, can be helpful. Forgiveness, healing, a beautiful, beautiful principle in our recovery. I continue to take inventory, and when wrong, promptly admit it as soon as possible. You know how that is. I try to. Once I get clean, I want to stay clean. What's been happening in my life the last few years on the inside is something good and something beautiful and something precious to me. Somehow I'm continuing to get the benefit of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, I came back from a long way. And I must be like that kid who isn't halfway there that I mentioned earlier. But it's important. My journey to God, and it's got to be important. In the big book it says that God could and would if he was sought. Spirituality. Love. About 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to be in the West Coast on a business thing, and I had a chance to be with Chuck C. a few hours in his living room. And it's a beautiful place. He's got a house on the side of the cliff overlooking the Pacific Ocean. There's a big picture window, and the ocean's out there, and the mountains are on the right. The town of Laguna Beach is down below, and there's cars running around. And on the left, there's a little desert. And Chuck likes to think and says that there's a little bit of desert in everybody's life. And I think maybe that's right. Nothing can be perfect. So he and I, for about 3 hours, were talking about God. Good AA members. Let me check that. For 2 hours and 50 minutes, Chuck talked about God. And I listened. And those of you who know him understand that. And he suddenly turned around to me and said, "Joe, I feel God on the inside." Chuck knew the way I felt about a power greater than myself. Chuck knew about my feeling about a father in heaven. Chuck has had many priests in his living room in the same position I was in. And I didn't feel anything in that regard. And we went to dinner and we went to a meeting. And I went back to Los Angeles, and the next day I did my work. The following morning I woke up. And for the first time I felt God, not my Father in heaven, but on the inside. And I knew that in order to keep this feeling, I had to cherish it. I had to walk with him. I knew he had been there all the time. I knew that I had seen him in the eyes of my wife and my children and my fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like I see him in this room tonight and feel him, God as I understand him, a God of my very own. And what really happened, of course, was that another door opened to this recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Elaine and I, Elaine who came into that Washingtonian Hospital and took me out just to give me a place to stay, like you would a wounded bird. We have had 5 children that we have been brought up, had the privilege of bringing up in this fellowship. We have 4 grandchildren. We have the kind of a relationship with these children and with each other that for me is unbelievable. This program works. This program works. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Anything, of course, I say is my own opinion. I think everything in Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual. I think our coffee. I think the love that we show each other. I think that this wonderful feeling that's in this room tonight. This feeling of unity, this feeling of recovery, yes, and this feeling of service that most of us are dedicated to. It's a beautiful, beautiful feeling for someone who has come from where I came from. And I'm grateful. We try to carry this message to other alcoholics. I think we all carry the message one day at a time by staying sober, working with others, doing what we can in our home group, being involved. Some of us have taken longer than others, but it seems that it keeps getting better all the time. If there's someone here tonight who is upset, who does not feel too good about themselves and their chances, as the book says, I urge you with all the earnestness that I can command that you come along with us, that you get a hold of the person on the right of you, the person on the left of you. This is some kind of a miracle, and it's getting better and more effective all the time. And I love those last 7 words in the 12th step. Tried to practice these principles in all my daily affairs. Because as long as I am thinking properly, as long as I am in the mainstream of this fellowship, as long as I am trying to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, those 7 words will keep me here for as long as I have breath. But what they tell me is that there is another mile to go and another way to go. And that I don't have it locked and I don't have it made. But I have a wonderful opportunity to walk with each one of you. I came here beaten and broken and alone. No big deal, just another drunk. The only difference was I was a young drunk in a day when there were not too many young drunks. I was hopeless and I was helpless, and I could not get sober. My life was running out my ears. It was gone. And somehow I found myself in that AA meeting. Early in March of 1949. And 30 years later, one day at a time, or given another couple of months, I'm here in Macon, Georgia tonight with you. It works. It works in the most beautiful way. And I'm grateful. I want each one of you to know that I love you. Love you in the way that I have been taught to love another person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And incidentally, everything I am a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here like a zombie. Whatever. It works. It works in the most beautiful way. And I'm grateful. I want each one of you to know that I love you. Love you in the way that I have been taught to love another person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And incidentally, everything I am a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here like a zombie. Whatever I am or whatever I can be, it's because of this fellowship. And so, I am here and grateful. And this program continues to work in my life one day at a time. I love you because, not only because you saved my life and continue to save it, I love you not only because I have seen you come in after me, many of you, and I have seen you beaten and broken and alone like I was, and I have seen this miracle work again and again in your lives. And therefore, it has strengthened my confidence in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think I love you most of all because I am deeply and acutely aware of the struggle that goes on in many of your lives as you try, as I have tried, to live this program and to apply it. Those guys didn't promise me a rose garden in Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me they had a way to get sober. And they had some things for me to do and some directions for me to follow. And some of those directions were not easy. It was never easy for me, selfish and self-centered as I am, to think of you first. It wasn't easy early on for me, resentful and hating, to be able to love and to really want to be your friend. It was not easy for me as I started to get sober and maybe was interested in some power and some money and some prestige. It was not easy to move those aside and stay in the mainstream of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my fellow members of the Macon Assembly, my experience is this. It has been worthwhile, and it continues to work. I think what I'd like to do, and I do want to thank Keith for having me and our group have this meeting this evening. I'd like to close my meeting with a little story that I heard many, many years ago when I was sober just a few months. Try to picture me, a young kid, scared out of his mind, wanting to get sober, confident he couldn't. And I heard this guy tell this story. And it's the story of the sick drunk. The drunk that had been drinking 2 or 3 weeks, and he was tapped out, and he was broke. There's no way he could promote another drink, and all he had to look forward to was the long night ahead. The DTs, the horrors, and the loneliness. And I know those kind of nights, and so do you, one way or another. And suddenly, a young fella came around the corner, and he spotted the sick drunk. And he'd known him, and he'd used to drink with him. He says, "Hold it, Johnny, I know what to do." And he ran into the drugstore just as it was about to close. He came out, and he gave him a half pint. He says, "Johnny, take this half pint. This will help you. Maybe you can come on home with me, and maybe we can do something in the morning." And suddenly, this drunk's life is transformed. He's no longer alone. He's got a half pint that he's got confidence in. He's got a place to stay. And here tonight in Macon, you represent Alcoholics Anonymous to me. You represent the miracle that I have been given in my life, one day at a time. I got the same kind of confidence in you and Alcoholics Anonymous that that sick drunk had in that guy in that half pint. And I feel, I hope, the same kind of gratitude that that sick drunk felt years ago. And so I don't know anything else to say except to echo the words of that sick drunk long ago. God is good. He's been very good to me, a sick drunk, and I'm grateful. Thank you.